You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Laurie Palmer. She's in Santa Cruz. Laurie, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for inviting me, Brainerd.
So let's talk about what you're working on now. There's a number of things I want to discuss about, you know, perhaps your writing and work, but what is it that you're doing at the moment?
I think that I have some sort of different strata of projects going on simultaneously. There's usually some very sort of bottom foundational underground strata that is a very long project. And that one right now is something that I've been calling the Lichen Museum, which is a I've been sort of dallying with for many, many years now, and it has not taken a really clear form, but I think it's because it's one of these projects that needs all this gestation time. And so that's a project that basically is thinking about long-term temporalities, and lichen being this pretty long living organism. But anyway, I could talk more about that. So there's, just to give a sense of my strata, that's like a deep time project. And then there's sort of more middle time projects. I just got back from Leipzig a day and a half ago, where I installed a project in a group show. The show is about extraction, and there's about four or five artists in it, and I contributed this piece that has been evolving over a couple of years, but it mostly takes the form of a really large hole that's made out of sort of concentric pieces of wood, and expands to fill whatever space it's in. And so that is a more sort of physical sculptural thing. And then there's this very immediate strata of the current political moment, and that feels like that calls for things that are much more present tense and fast. So I am not sure exactly what form it's taking, but I just moved to Santa Cruz recently, where I took a job here, and I'm getting to know the people, and we're working on different kind of maybe inflatables and other ways to deal with the inauguration coming up at the end of the month. And so just to sort of reiterate, there's, I think, often, you know, these different layers of practice, and I feel like when I talk about my work, it's, I think very much that it's about time, different kinds of time, and so the different practices kind of reflect that. And the collective, collaborative work is often the most immediate present tense time, and then the sort of deeper strata of long projects is usually more alone, lonely, slow, you know, kind of often connected to writing and another kind of gestation period. So also I'm using these geological metaphors, and it's very much present to the content of my work too. Some of the sort of lower level strata are also having to do with it. Being interested in these shale formations that have been, you know, being tapped in recent years around the world, and brought up to the surface for this incredible devastation and, you know, disruption at the surface. But I've been thinking about the shapes of these things underground as kind of giants that could be interesting to develop a empathetic relationship to, and sort of think them in a being in some way. So that's also a project that is kind of slowly unfolding in different places, thinking about some these formations that are much bigger than we can really comprehend, and, you know, completely invisible, not necessarily how to represent them, but how to create a sort of empathetic relationship to them that would not be so much about depletion and extraction and removal, but a kind of coexistence or something. So that's sort of a general outline.
Okay, so those are about, I mean, four or five things happening now. The Lichen Museum is began talking about, and also the show you're having in Leipzig. And you mentioned something about the political moment and possible collaborations of doing inflatables. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that, if that's not too nebulous now, because that's, to me, that does seem enormously important. I just talked to Pablo Elguera, and he was talking about, you know, the idea of how important it is for artists now to make art more than ever, and even pushing it so far as to say that, you know, artists under dictatorships tend to produce some amazing art. You know, not necessarily meaning that it's activist art, but that it has a I guess an urge to get out, unlike any other time. So maybe we should talk a little bit about that, and you could comment on that, but also in the context of what you're talking about, this political moment and ideas about inflatables during the inauguration. What are you thinking there in terms of that project?
It is very much more around activist projects, and I'm always been interested in how to leverage art sometimes when necessary for a more specific political goal. I don't have any qualms about doing that. So it might be slight, you know, something different than what Helguera was talking about. And I actually did see that interview, and it's really great. I really respect his work so much. But so we are part of I'm starting to be part of a people who are like in a lot of communities around the U.S. working for a general strike on January 20th, the day of the inauguration. And so there's different projects planned. To some people are going to build a wall and then take it down. And we're also figuring out different ways to involve the students at UC Santa Cruz, which is where I'm teaching now. And so one idea, since they'll be marching down from campus to the town, how to make that a really visible and actually, you know, it's weird to say playful and joyful, but, you know, I think those are really important parts of being able to demonstrate and protest so that you have the energy and will to do it. So, what I'm thinking about are really pretty much, you know, how to engage in the immediate responses now. But I think of all of the work that I'm involved in as having some relationship to politics, no question. But again, it's what are the privileges of time that you have to really think long and hard about something and produce it slowly, or when do you feel like you need to and want to be connecting with others and generating something at a different pace.
That's a very different, in a way, that's a very different, and maybe we can talk a little bit about your students' reaction to that. I mean, it's and especially in the context of your activism in the past, I mean, if I'm understanding you correctly, the idea of doing socially, I don't want to say relevant work, because it's all socially relevant, right? I mean, some great paintings that aren't necessarily activist work are certainly socially relevant and important. But in terms of maybe how your students are seeing art and their, you know, so-called career and others, the idea of using art and creative means as a way of, you know, battling political ideologies is very different than the notion of trying to figure out what gallery they're going to get into when they graduate. Is that something that's like addressed in the class, or I don't have an insight into that at all.
Well, I have to say that I'm in a really different context pedagogically than I was. I taught for 18 years full time at the Art Institute of Chicago, and the students there were sort of self-identified as artists. And here at UC Santa Cruz, it's a public institution. It's not a BFA. They're working on a BA. They're really, really great students, and they have a different relationship to the art world, the art market, I mean, plural worlds markets. And I think that that I'm still trying to figure out really what their relationship to it all is. I think that there's less what I've seen so far here, how do I get into a gallery, and more how can I make my art, make me a living, and that usually means, animation, Disney, digital production stuff here in Silicon Valley. That doesn't directly answer your question, but maybe it does tell you that I'm still a little confused about my change of location, because it felt like it's a really, really different student population, and not to generalize entirely, but I think that what I'm hoping and will be possible is to, as I work with them more, build an understanding of the different contexts for making work, that sometimes, the direct sort of political application can feel like not a duty or a imperative, but something that gives you opportunity to respond in a way that otherwise you might feel helpless, and that you can do that collectively, which I think is, again, for me, part of the immediacy is it's all about kind of working with people and that being part of politics as well. But also for students to feel that, like you said, that, other work they're doing could also be deeply connected to political questions and effects, but maybe happens in a different context, in a different pace or tempo. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. It opens up a lot of questions, because, like you're saying, it's also, and I don't think that's it is a generalization, but I think it's fair that in Santa Cruz, there's a different, I don't know what you call it, but a different ethic, something different in the air than there is in Chicago in terms of perhaps how artists see themselves in the world.
And so what I think I was going to say is that I teach sculpture, and that for me is very much a bodily practice. It's about stuff in the world. It's part of why I understand, and like so many people do, that social practice comes out of sculpture. It's like the space that your body occupies, and there's very little work, and at least in the immediate area, that students can see and experience. Experience with their bodies. They can see anything on the screen, and they're really connected to the screen. But it's not like there's a lot of galleries, or even it doesn't have the rich heterogeneity of the city. It's got the amazing landscapes and natural world and all that, which could be taken in a certain way. Maybe that's even part of the Like a Museum project. But there's not the same kind of physical experience of work designated as art, and except on the screen. And so that's really different than, Chicago is an incredibly diverse art situation. And so much of what was going on there for the, time that I think of being there had to do with sculpture and, work out in the world and people talking about it, understanding it as, whether it's a continuation of social practice or sculpture or all mixed up together. So yeah, it's a different world. I mean, it's a different time too. It's you know, I'm sure that it's not maybe that cut and dried between California and Illinois, but.
Right, but it's certainly it's different. I mean, you mentioned the Lycan Museum. We haven't discussed that much, and how does that feed into this kind of this topic of collaboration and also activism? What will eventually happen with that museum, and what is it about exactly?
Yeah, well, it's definitely partly about collaboration. Thinking about initially. My understanding of Lycan as a two-part organism was itself a sort of paradigm of symbiotic or collaborative organism. And I've been interested for forever in how ourselves are not, you know, that the individual is a fiction, that we're relational beings. And the Lycan organism seemed like a kind of classic, you know, evidence of this relationality. And so I sort of began by thinking of, you know, how could I make it a project that basically just directed people towards looking for lichen around the world, because, I mean, in their world, because it's everywhere once you start looking. And so one of the
lichen, you mean that's a type of moss, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I have to, I always presume that people know what this is. It's actually a fungus and an algae that have found each other, and when they find each other, they change their forms. Their morphology dramatically changes from what the fungus or the algae would look like on its own, and they become this other kind of entity that is completely specific to that relationship. So, yep, it looks kind of like moss sometimes, but it's a very different physiology, very different kind of, plant physiology.
So we have to be trained a bit, as you're saying, to look for this.
Yeah, that's true. So that's the way in which taking people on lichen walks is also involves a certain kind of, you know, pedagogical instruction about what these things are. And there's, you know, more lichen in the world probably than any other plant. I don't even know. You can't really call it a plant. And they take, you know, thousands of different forms and are continually evolving. And they exist in parts of the world where nothing else grows. I first got interested when I traveled to the Arctic, and it was the one thing that was underfoot. But it also grows in deserts, and so there's a kind of five-part radicality. It's collaboration, relationship. It's resistance to cultivation because it doesn't take to being grown in the laboratory, so it can't really be, you know. Commodified and turned into capital's purposes. It's really, really slow, which I find to be itself a kind of resistant quality and a kind of cultivating of a kind of attention because of its slow growth. And it's very, very integrated with the substrate that it's growing on. So this is where I just get really geeky about but yeah, it takes a certain.
No, but that's interesting. I mean, you can get geeky about that, and tell me a little bit more about how it will be presented, because it also, in terms of everything we're talking about, it also does sound like an analogy or paradigm even of artistic practice or one path.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I think that so far, how it's manifested is I made a video. I went and interviewed lichenologists in the UK and Scotland, who, you know, spend all their life doing this. And you're right; they are very much like artists because it's a profession that has, you know, very little return in terms of profit, and they just love it. They just completely love it. So I was really interested in who these people are. And it's also taken form as various walks and different sites, you know, usually initiated at a gallery and then walking into the world from there. And I also started to make posters advertising the museum and sort of turning people outward to go outside and look, you know, for the always present, always open, always free museum. So in terms of it really taking hold, I probably will do some kind of longer writing project on it. I am also really interested in writing, and the last book I did took about 10 years, so it's possible that this one will too.
So it'll end up as a book itself, the Museum
it
of
may.
Life, as well as this open air.
And you know, video is sort of like a way to also be a kind of instruction, you know, around what this stuff is and why it's interesting.
Right. Well, that's very interesting. I look forward to that book, and I love that idea, because that seems to kind of also be so much a part of what your practice has always been about. I mean, there's this kind of politics inherent in what you're, you know, like in museum, but also it's anti-establishment somehow as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. But it's a radicality that's kind of, I guess I said it a lot, slow. So it needs to be paired with practices that are more visible and effective, you know.
Right. Well, it's a combination, but also it's the collaborative nature of it is what you're also working with. I mean, you're giving tours, but are other people contributing to this museum in any way? How does the collaboration work there beyond the tours?
Yeah, you know, initially I did think that maybe it could be a there's a lot of people actually who are interested in Lichen, a lot of artists who make images of it, and I did think of making a website that would be a sort of collective museum that way, and it's not quite clear to me yet, that collaborativeness, so I'm still talking about a project that's very much in process.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting. And
yeah.
Before we go, you know, I'm not going to ask you the very last question yet, but I also wanted to ask you a little bit about the collaborative HaHa that was started in 88. Is that correct? Because that seems like it may have set the tone for some of the things that we've been discussing.
Yes, most definitely. Yeah, HaHa started... Yeah, go on.
No, you go on. Yeah, tell me how it started and a little bit about it.
Well, we were friends in grad school, and then we we just liked each other's work, and we started working together, John Plouffe, Richard House, Wendy Jacob, and myself. And we, you know, it's a different time then, obviously, but we were very interested in making work outside galleries, outside the sort of typical spaces of art, and we just proceeded to do that without necessarily invitations initially. And then because of the time, I think there was a lot of interest in situation-based work. It's starting to grow, so we were able to do projects that became, you know, situated in various parts of, well, in Europe and the U.S. and different places. And we had some opportunities given to us that were really great, including Sculpture Chicago, which was actually a long-term project where we developed this hydroponic garden in Chicago to grow vegetables and herbs for people with HIV, and that was something we did for about 3 years. And HaHa, yeah, I think it was a paradigm for me of working collaboratively and of trying to, you know, just learn all those things you learn when you're making collective decisions, and it was really really hard sometimes and really exultant also. And we worked together for 20 years, which is a really long time. And I since then been involved with other collaborative groups, most recently a more explicit political one, Chicago Torture Justice Memorials, which is a group that we started in Chicago, which is kind of a long story. I won't tell you about it now, but, you know, I think that the taste for collaboration definitely started with HaHa.
Well, that's exciting. I'm glad we talked a bit about that. And before we go, I wanted to ask you what books you're reading lately, if you would mind sharing that with me, or a book or a magazine or anything that you're reading at the moment.
Yeah, I'm reading Everything I Can by Michael Martyr, who is a philosopher who wrote one of his books called Plant Thinking, and he's developing a sort of approach that, you know, people have written and talked a lot about active matter and Jane Bennett's material philosophies, and this is sort of getting into plant philosophy. And it's really, really wonderful work. And one of his projects is also a collaboration with a French artist where he wrote short text and she did these amazing photograms of plants that were taken from the Chernobyl zone. And it turns out Martyr, it's M-A-R-D-E-R, he was living in the Soviet Union during the time of Chernobyl, and he was asthmatic, and his parents shipped him off to Belarus to recuperate at exactly the moment that Chernobyl happened. So he was exposed to enormous amounts of radiation at age 6, and when he was supposed to be going somewhere to be cured. Anyway, he writes about this in such incredibly beautiful prose, and it's just really, it's kind of wonderful work that brings together, you know, real-time experience with these sort of ideas and philosophies and aesthetics.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Lori, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure hearing about your work and multiple activities.
Well, it's really generous of you to do this, Brainerd. And good luck, and thanks so much for the whole archive you're creating.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.